Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com, RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Let's talk. Talk.
John Brown. Ladies and gentlemen, girls and boys, raise a glass. It's Ollie Smith. Good morning to you, Ollie.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, let me... As the song goes, where do I begin, my friend? I mean, I had you all set up, ready to go. As you can see, I'm wearing, obviously, my best... I'm wearing my tropical onesie, especially for you, especially in your thing. And I look over, and then there's a worried face of a tech guy giving the what you didn't want to see as a gladiator, you know, the emperor, you know, Commodus going, you know, get rid of him, bring on that Russell Crowe chap. So anyway, so I left
the terrible thumbs down.
The terrible thumbs down. But you're here now. That's the main thing. Now, how are
you? I'm so glad, and I love your shirt.
Thank you very much.
You've outshirted me. I mean, I've come dressed pretty much as the background to my office, which is painted in lurid colours.
I was going to say, for a man who writes about wine, perhaps if other things on the Bon Viveur playbook, if you are, I would expect a more subdued background, because if you've come and you've been, I don't know, sampling the desserts of, you know, Albanian Shiraz, for example, and it's had that, it's had that effect on you, you want something very dark and bright coloured while you pop the Alka-Seltzer in, surely, Ollie.
Do you know, I've always loved bright colours, and actually most of the things behind me, the boxes, are actually old wine crates. They're wooden wine crates that I've painted in all the colours of the rainbow. I just think it kind of reflects my love of wine, really. There's a style of wine out there to suit literally everybody's taste and everybody's budget. So this is my visual representation of it.
Now, the thing is, if you say we're writing a book on wine, and I know that wine is now perhaps more egalitarian than it was before, but, you know, there used to be, you know, because I'm a child of the 70s, and wine was a complex, it's always almost a dark art. You had to have a blazer, cravat, very sniffy, lots of gargling, and lots of, oh no, that won't possibly do.
There was an awful lot of that. And actually, when I started out, I had a job at a wine shop. I was about 16 years of age, and I went in there, and it was kind of as you describe. It was basically everybody in a sort of uniform of red trousers and blazers and all saying the same thing about wine. They spoke about wine in a secret code. They used language that I didn't really understand. They used phrases and terminology. And I couldn't help thinking, hang on a sec, surely this delicious drink should be available to absolutely everybody, and surely it shouldn't be up to somebody else to tell us what's good. In my view, my job is really to listen to the person in front of me, to find out what they absolutely love, recommend them something similar at a price they can afford that'll go with their pork chops that night, and send them to the shores of Pleasure Island.
I've always
thought wine is a local thing. It's a thing to connect us, you know, not divide us.
Here's the thing. I just had a thought which had never occurred to me before, because, you know, obviously you were destined to be on this particular path. I can imagine Careers Day with Ollie and the careers master saying, now, Ollie, what do you want to do in future? And you saying, I want to get into wine. You know,
it's a really strange job. I mean, there are so many avenues that I could have gone down. Do you know what my careers advisor said to me, actually, when I sort of had the chat filled in the form? I remember he sat back in his chair and he said, yeah, I know what you should be. A landscape gardener. And I remember thinking at the time, I've got no interest in gardening. I was quite a sort of child of the indoors. I really like doing theatre production and writing. Actually, as the years have gone by, it's far closer to what I would have expected than I could have dreamt, because now I am obsessed with gardening. I love vineyards. I love going outside, seeing where all this stuff grows and where the magic happens. And actually what it is about is the people. So when you really meet people who are doing wine and growing it and making it, what I've realised over the years, they're all incredibly passionate. They're super down to earth, and they just can't wait to connect with the next person who comes through their door and show them why they love their wine so much.
Because here's this thing, it's rather than the, you know, the famous wine in a can, which is a brilliant comedy sketch, and if you haven't seen it, go for it. But the world of wine is full of stories. It's if you want your David against your Goliaths, you know, you absolutely, every wine has a story of, you know, and I'm not going to get all, he had a dream, he followed his vision and went on a journey to wine. The thing is, in the world of wine, that is absolutely the case.
It really is. I think you've nailed it there, because the thing about wine when I do it on telly is it obviously looks like red wine, white wine or fizz. You know, there's not much in between, maybe some rosé or something else. But you're right. Locked in that juice is the identity, not just of the place it's come from and the traditions, but of the person who's made it. What are their values? How friendly are they to the environment? You know, are they caring for all the bugs and beetles? What do they like to work with? All of the little nuances and all of the kind of sense of their kind of everything that makes it unique is always in that bottle of wine. So it could start with a great variety. And, you know, I always say to people, great varieties are a little bit like, you know, movie stars. If you have a favourite one, you know, I mean, maybe we pick Angelina Jolie, you kind of know what you're going to get from her performances.
Dark, full bodies, that sort of thing.
Depending on the genre. Depending on the genre, they'll be slightly different. So grape varieties are the same. You could have like a Shiraz, nice big spicy grape variety. You plant that in a hot climate. Oh, it's going to be like drinking an autumnal bonfire, full of smoke, full of ripe fruit, massive. But if you plant it somewhere a bit cooler, maybe up a mountain or next to the sea, much more nimble, like kind of raspberries on roller skates, doing a bit of kind of roller skate ballet. It's that sort of change and difference that makes the wine special and unique. And I love to share the stories because it's a hoot. At the end of the day, it's about having fun.
But one of the great things as well, I mean, again, I grew up in a world where basically there were three types of wine. There was, you know, Paul Newman's, you know, Paul Newman had his California, you see, you're smiling now because you remember that, don't you? The world of wine.
Yeah, there were those emblematic bottles that we had, Matthias Rosé in the 70s and 80s. That pink bottle.
Who didn't have a candle in their student days?
The candle. There's a great photo somewhere. You can have a look online. I think it's Jimi Hendrix, you know, rocking a bottle of Matthias. He loved the stuff. But those iconic bottles, you know, that was sort of in the shape of a pirate's flask of grog. Then you had the very dark bottle of Black Tower that was ridged. The Blue Nun, of course, which was blue. You had all those emblematic things. And I think we went from there to the sort of, outside of Europe, the Aussies, the New Zealanders, the South Africans started making wine in a way that was a bit less formal. They talked about it in plain English, you know, on the bottle label, you could actually read what it might taste like and what food you might have with it. And suddenly the democratization happened and it became good value and we got it in supermarkets and people discovered it for themselves. And I would say to anybody listening, you don't need any special skills to enjoy wine. You know, very simply, if you want to know the difference between a great wine and an okay wine, great wine, the flavours will always linger for a long time. That's really the biggest difference. And maybe some more complexity, some more things going on. But it's entirely up to you what style you like and how you want to enjoy it. We've all got different favourite movies. We've all got different favourite types of pizza. You know, so it should be with flavours of wine. Embrace what you love and follow that path. I've always imagined, you know, it's your journey and don't let anybody tell you otherwise.
And also, you know, you tend to think that because, you know, back in the early 80s, everything, you know, it was the Gallo brothers. I mean, they revolutionized the way that people bought
wine.
Because it was easy, affordable. They had the best marketing campaign in the world in the States. They just left loads of empty bottles everywhere. They didn't have any true story.
And
they hadn't got any wine. They had lots of bottles. They put them around all these dust bottle places in LA and people thought, gee, these people must be ordering lots of this stuff. And thus it came to pass.
I think I love the way that wine happens as well, because you've touched on something there. When the sort of bigger companies made wine reliable. So previously, you know, year to year, wine would taste very different depending on the character of the year. You know, that was what's called the vintage. But when the Aussies got their hands on it and came out with, you know, Jacob's Creek and Hardy's and all that, they made blends that would taste very similar year on year. So you could rely on it in the same way that you would rely on your baked beans. And it actually wasn't anything new. That had been done in champagne. In non-vintage champagne, blending it from different years for decades. I mean, you know, if not centuries. So actually, it was a way of giving people confidence. And then, the world's your oyster. Once you've kind of, you know, I get the hang of this, I quite like that flavour of wine, you can go exploring. The thing I will tell you about wine is there is always something new to find. You know, you get two harvests every year, one in the Northern Hemisphere, one in the South. endlessly inventive blends. You know, there's always a new country making wine. I visited Bhutan earlier in the year. They're making wine there, and it's really good. Who knew?
But this is the thing, see, because, again, once you get the... once the arcane dark secrets of planting, of caring for the grape become more, you know, more people get into wine, more people think, well, hang on a second, I can take this grape and maybe it will work in, you know, as long as you're not sort of, you know, I don't know, an Icelandic Chardonnay, who knows, what could we see? But you know, but there's a saying goes, throw it against the wall and see, we'll see what grape sticks, basically, isn't it, Ollie?
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think you can, the setting of it is different depending on kind of the food you're having, the mood you're in. You know, if you're sitting on a hot beach, you don't really want a massive, great glass of huge, filthy port. You want something nimble and bright and refreshing. But it's also about pairing it to the people you're with. You know, I always think that's important as well. Certain people, you know, like certain things. You know, you can make a wine into a moment by unlocking its setting in a very easy way. So a good example, you know, where the festive season is not far away. If you've got a bottle of Prosecco knocking around in the fridge, just get some mozzarella cheese, tear that up on a plate, serve the Prosecco with the mozzarella to the people who come around for a festive drink. Dead easy pairing, similar level of intensity of flavours, but a contrast of textures. So bubbly mozzarella, creamy mozzarella, bubbly Prosecco. Can you think of anything worse than bubbly mozzarella?
I'm just thinking, that is really is the back of the fridge, isn't it? That is like, I've got some bubbly
it's
mozzarella,
horrible.
Keep that away from me.
could be the title of an autobiography, maybe. Indeed. Bubbly mozzarella, the Matt Emmett's story.
I think of one of the great, you know, this should be one of the commandments, thou shalt not serve bubbly mozzarella. And in a seamless link, you've done the wine commandment. You've done the Ten Commandments of Wine.
Oh, I have, yes. So I've included the Ten Commandments of Wine in my new book, which is called Wine, Everything You Need to Know.
Yeah.
And I divided the book into the basics and wine wisdom, and it's got all you need to know about ordering in a restaurant, you know, are screw caps any good? All these are questions. But the Ten Commandments I absolutely love. And I think I'm right in saying the first commandment, I've got it here.
I should actually have some music here at this point. We should have a Charlton Heston. I've got the beard.
Charlton Heston, can you imagine?
Yeah.
The first commandment, thou shalt not give two hoots for what anyone else thinks of thy taste in wine.
Huzzah!
It's always up to you.
Yeah.
And all of the commandments, you know, offer you something, you know, a bit different. I mean, you know, there's one of them, I think it's the sixth commandment, when it's like roast chicken. People often kind of think, it's a classic, you know, British dish. We have it, in fact, across the whole of Europe we have roast chicken. It's wonderful. What should we have with roast chicken? You know what? If you're feeling like splashing out, vintage champagne is amazing, but you don't have to splash out all that money. You can get good French Crémant, which is fantastic value for money. 10 quid, 10 euros, something like that. Great Spanish Cava. This is such a nice pairing with the roast chicken. It's like a rich, deep fizz, and it feels really indulgent. And you know what else it feels? It feels like you're having fun. And that, for me, is the end game with all wine.
Because surely, Ollie, and I'll get all deep and meaningless on you at this point, but the thing is, wine, like, should add to your mood. It should be an accompaniment to how you feel. So I am lucky enough to, you know, I've got my goddaughters, I've got my best friend, we sit, you know, I do the roast chicken on Sunday, that's tradition, and it's not about, well, yeah, absolutely, you know, you've got to have wine, you've got a mail in the house, you've got a token mail, you've got to do something decent. So,
yes,
exactly, apart from make strange rumbling noises around the coffee machine. So, therefore, do the Sunday lunch, and, you know, the lady of the house, the pirate queen of Queen, she will have, you know, a very nice, she's half Cuban, so therefore we have something, there's always something sort of alcoholic going on there. But it is the round the table with the food, the alcohol adds to the occasion. So it's, you know, it's... So have, I mean, famously, when the goddaughters were little, they were to, when this sound was made, they would go, woo! And even today, because it's always cabin time at our place, even today, they still do. So that is a Pavlov's dog memory, isn't it?
It's true. And I think if they made that sound, the sound of my text messages, I would answer every single one of them, rather than just thinking, what's that? No, I can't be bothered. I love that sound. It's a sound of merriment. And you're right. A bottle of wine shared in good company, it's a common experience. You're all having the same thing. You can all have an opinion on it. You may not all like it to the same degree. You might. Doesn't really matter. What you're doing is you're gathered around it. It's almost like a totemic moment that unites us. And the conviviality of a bottle of wine is a great feeling. And we don't really talk about that very much in the trade. We always talk about the flavours of it, the stories of it. But actually, a glass or two of wine with a good meal in good company does feel very warm. It's very connective. And I think that kind of side of conviviality is a real blessing from the world of wine. It's been done for thousands of years. You know, 8,000 years ago, wine started in Georgia. Thanks a million. It's brilliant. And long may it continue. Here's to the next 8,000.
So as we are sort of tobogganing madly into the festive season.
Yeah.
He says. I mean, what is... Should the addendum to the commandments, Ollie, because we like an addendum around these parts, should it be, you know, on the run into the festive? Don't peak too early. Now, I'm talking to you from Spain, and we know a thing about, because in Spain, our first celebration starts on the 5th of December. That's the first holiday. Oh. It's then followed by another holiday on the 8th. So obviously nobody goes to work on the 7th, you know, and if it's before a weekend, then you won't see anybody for a week. But, you know, take your imbibing. Should you have a plan of sort of tipples rather than just going for, because, you know, the British seem to go, you know, I hear nothing from my friends in London between Christmas Eve and New Year, because they're all lying there thinking, is it too early to start the Baileys? But champagne, I suppose, in the morning will get you going as a pickup with the Quality Street, won't it?
Yeah, a bit of vim in the morning. But I think you're so right about spreading it out. And I've got the fifth commandment here, which is called Sherry Wednesdays. So I invented Sherry Wednesdays.
Right.
And in the colder months, basically, it involves gathering around a fire or anywhere warm with somebody you love at 4 p.m. every Wednesday for a sherry. And it will change your life. So the way I do it is I start in about November time, Sherry Wednesdays.
Right.
So, you know, the kids are grown up now. So if they're passing through, you know, we'll sit down, the neighbours, whoever, 4 o'clock on a Wednesday, do it. It builds up to the festive season beautifully. And in Spain, oh my word, some of the greatest wines in the world are from Spain, but sherry has got to be up there.
Jerez. For me. We call it Jerez, Ollie, in these parts. Jerez.
Jerez.
Exactly.
Sí, señor. It's el mejor en todo el mundo.
Oh,
it's
so good. Ladies and gentlemen, he speaks Spanish too.
I know a tiny bit. I know winemaker Spanish, but I love it because it's one of those fine wines for a fun price. You know, it takes years to make it. You know, you go into those wonderful cathedrals down in Jerez and Sanlúcar, and my word, the craft is beyond incredible. Where are you in Spain, actually?
I'm currently slumming it in the Badlands just outside Marbella, so therefore, you know...
That's so nice.
I tell you, honestly, send an AIDS package, Ollie. It's terrible. It's terrible. You know,
I'll send you wine.
But also, it's funny you should mention sherry, because again, sherry, and it just shows the trends, because I remember as a small child growing up in rural Staffordshire that every New Year's Eve I would stay with my grandparents, because my parents were having a fang time, and we would have a sherry at 12 o'clock, but it was a cream sherry, you know, because it was the 70s. And again, it shows how trends change in alcohol.
It's absolutely right. And interestingly, I was at a wine tasting this week. Basically, in my job, I'll taste all the supermarket wines twice a year, once in spring, once in the autumn, and it's the autumn season at the moment. What I've noticed this autumn, cream sherry is actually coming back, and I'm really pleased to see it back. So for those who haven't tasted it, it basically smells and tastes a bit like a mince pie filling. It's got that kind of tanginess, that sweetness, and it's quite vibrant. And for years, it was huge. And then it went away in the 80s and 90s. It faded. I am chuffed a bit to see it back because it's really good value. Stick it in the fridge. And honestly, it's like an early festive treat. And you could even pour it over some vanilla ice cream for a naughty kick.
Ooh.
Beautiful stuff. Cream sherry forever.
Should we mention? I mean, some drinks are coming back, but can we at least not have the resurrection of baby sham? Do you think, Ollie?
I can't say, but I've heard that the Perry baby sham may be making a small comeback. But I'll just leave that there because I don't know. It's not gospel truth, but I've heard a rumour that it might be coming back. Good old Perry, though. You know, fizzy pear booze. I love it. You know, great stuff. Cider's wonderful. Perry's even more amazing.
So what's the aim, Ollie? What was when you woke up that morning and the muse struck, pointed and said, "You, Ollie, shall write the book on wine, everything you need to know but were afraid to ask or even imbibe." What was the because I said there are a myriad. I mean, there are books sloshing through the section of your local independent bookstore. So, you know, what do you hope that people are going to take? It's easy to read. It's light. It's funny for a start, I suppose.
It's all about informality. So I sat down and I thought, I want to give the basics so people can understand, you know, exactly why wine tastes the way it does. I then want to give them my wine wisdom, because I've been on Saturday Kitchen on BBC One for the last nearly 20 years. Blimey. And I've never written a book about wine. So I finally put everything I need to know, all the useful salient facts, like actually facts that you need to know, into one book. And the other thing I'd say about it is that the illustrations done by a guy called Luke Bird, he's just made it really friendly, you know, all the kind of bottle shots and the recommendations. They're just like, they're quite welcoming. And the language I've used, I've hoped to keep it simple. You know, things like, how can you gift wine? You know, are bottles best? Screw caps any good? What are organic wines? Why location matters? And also, my top 30 wines to try before you die.
Now, come on. That's a big ask. That's like saying pick your first, because again, it's subjective. So are there some, because there's the part, is it the Parker wine? No, I've got 99.5 spots on the Parker thing. So, but in real life, for those of us who don't have the occasional 30 grand in the back pockets to pick up a 1975 Chateauneuf du Pape, where should people be? What would you say are, just pick three that they should try before?
I would say dry
drinking the bleeding things, but there you go.
Well, I'll start with Spain because I love it. I've got Tio Pepe en Rama Fino, which is available. It's amazing. It's a dry sherry. It's wine's answer to a dry martini. If you like green olives, you'll absolutely love that. No better drink to have with a bit of tapas.
What's that called again? I can hear the scribbling of pens, you see.
Tio Pepe en Rama. So the Tio Pepe Fino that you'll see is widely available is great. The en Rama one is a bit richer, so it comes straight from the cask and just has a bit more flavour and depth. Just over the border in Portugal, an absolute bargain steal of a wine is Solheiro. Solheiro's Sunny Spot Alvarinho, which you've probably seen. And it's one of those wines that if you do go to Portugal, it's widely available. And every time I drink it, I genuinely think it's one of the best wines in the world. It's vibrant, a little bit tropical, totally clean as a whistle, incredible to have with shellfish, fish, or if you're just after something refreshing for an aperitif. And then why don't we have something... What else have we got in the top 10? Oh, we'll give a shout out to Sam Neill. Actor Sam Neill from Jurassic Park.
Yes, indeed.
Two Paddocks. His Pinot Noir. It's fantastic Pinot Noir. Some Pinot Noir, right? It's a light, elegant style of wine. They can cost, I'm not joking, thousands of euro a bottle, thousands of pounds. And you don't need to remortgage your house to taste them. That's about scarcity and collectors. His wine genuinely is, you know, 30 quid, 40 quid, maybe around that price. But it tastes like the very best in the world. So if you really want to know and you want a glimpse of the best, Sam Neill's Two Paddocks. Also, he's the loveliest bloke I've ever met. So he gets a shout out for being just a genuinely lovely, lovely person.
Final question. How long did it take you to come up with the title for the book?
That's a great question. We agonised over the title. And I was sitting having lunch with Sarah Lavelle, my publisher, and I said to her, what are we going to call it? You know, and she wanted to call it all sorts of different ideas. And I sat back in my chair and said, hang on, Sarah, has anybody ever called a book Wine? You know, just Wine in capital letters. And she went, oh, hundreds, loads of them. We had a look online. Nobody had done it. So we got Wine, capital letters, subheading, Everything You Need to Know.
The book is called Wine, Everything You Need to Know. It's by the wonderful Ollie Smith. I was going to say, if people want to find you online, but obviously you do dabble in these things and every sort of morning you're on TV, basically, my friend.
Yeah, I'm online. My website's there. I'm on a book tour as well. So if you find yourself in the UK, all the dates are up on my website or on my social media. It'd be lovely to see you there.
The book is called Wine. By the way, you can order it via our own virtual web bookstore on the web. Just go there and a well-known South American river system will bring it coming towards you. The book is called Wine, Everything You Need to Know. It's by Ollie Smith. Ollie, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you this morning.
This holiday season, reach for the one butter that never disappoints. Kerrygold. Made with milk from grass-fed cows on Irish family farms, it's rich, creamy, and perfect for baking. Whether browning butter for cookies or crafting the flakiest pie crust, Kerrygold's high butterfat content makes all the difference in flavor and texture. Holiday treats will taste extraordinary.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right.